This was probably the biggest moment that I'd ever thrown myself into. And I just remember day one, standing in front of a whole bunch of new people, me telling them that we've now taken over the business. Because it really is a journey. It's a journey for our clients and it's a journey for our staff. Everyone is on the same page with values, then the journey should be relatively smooth. Once I got in front of them, I had a very good chance of closing. But getting in front of them was probably the biggest challenge. Find out what they want to do, find out what motivates them and help them achieve that. And I think what you'll find is that they'll reward themselves for actually doing what they want to do. It will be a day that I remember for the rest of my life, I can assure you.
Welcome to the show, Dion Besser.
Thank you very much for having me.
It's amazing to have you and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Have you made any New Year's resolutions?
Over the break, you know, and I was fortunate enough to get a couple of weeks off this year. And for me, it's never really weeks off. You know, it's always about planning the next year. For me, I think it's really getting back to the values, you know, work-life balance and making sure my team have that as well. Because the last couple of years coming out of COVID, I think things have changed quite significantly. And I think just revisiting some of those core values, I think that's my challenge for this year.
Yeah, it always feels like, you know, when you come back fresh, it's like almost like, okay, blank page, let's go again kind of thing.
Oh, can I tell you, it's unfortunately never a blank page for me. It's always a very full page and it's where do I start?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, speaking of starting, you've actually started to contribute a bit to Elite Agent magazine and you've written a couple of articles that have gone really well. So that's why I thought, let's get you on the podcast and talk about some of the things that cool things that you've been doing with Investor & Co. Let's go back to the beginning a little bit because I know you've practiced real estate all over the world, London, Australia, that sort of thing. So let's go to the beginning of Besser & Co, which I believe was 2009. What was your thinking when you started your own agency?
You know, I had the great fortune of working for some amazing people up until I opened Besser & Co. And in some cases, you know, I learned what not to do as much as I had learned what to do. And I had the fortune of working in smaller agencies. I had the fortune of working in franchises and also some of those bigger boutique agencies. And really, by the time I got to the age of 27, I'd really seen quite a wide range of different management styles, different types of real estate businesses from London to Melbourne and surround. So, you know, what brought me to opening up my own business, I think what I was trying to achieve is bringing something a little bit more genuine back to real estate. You know, I had a lot of training and the fortune of training with some of the best real estate mentors and coaches in Australasia. And I found that things were very, very scripted. And I think the scripts are really important, by the way. We love scripts and dialogues. But I think what we had lost, or what we in some agencies, they had lost that genuine desire to provide good quality advice.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, like I thought what was interesting too is this stuff about not just bringing something different to the table, but also sort of, you know, talking about transparency and the need where some agents sort of like to keep a bit of cloak and smoke and mirrors, or I was going to say cloak and daggers, but that's
cloak and dagger. Yeah, there's a bit of that as well.
Going in with like such a different approach, what were some of the biggest challenges that you faced in the beginning?
Well, I think for Besser & Co, I mean, I did have the option to open a franchise, you know, where everything was set up for you, the marketing, the websites, all that sort of resource. So by opening up a independent that nobody had heard of, I think for me, the biggest challenge, which I didn't realize would be a challenge, by the way, and I learned very quickly that it was getting on a shopping list for vendors, for landlords, and also for good quality staff. You know, being front of mind to be called in to sell a home or to manage somebody's rental property, or even for somebody looking to get into real estate to even consider Besser & Co, that was really my biggest challenge. Once I got in front of a client or a potential new employee, generally, you know, I could motivate them, I convince them, or show the points of difference that Besser & Co had. Once I got in front of them, I had a very good chance of closing. But getting in front of them was probably the biggest challenge.
Yeah, because I mean, back then we were only just starting with things like social media and starting with digital marketing. Like you didn't have all those advantages back then. So if you were starting an agency today, what would your approach look like that would be different?
Oh, you've had so many people on your podcast who are probably going to say the same thing as me, and that is really just exposure. You know, just showing people in your community, in your network, that you are knowledgeable in this particular area. And if in 2009, we did have Facebook, right? But I don't think people used it as a resource to find a real estate agent or to find any particular service. I think it was just a resource for us all to connect and find friends at that particular moment. But in hindsight, if I had just through social media communicated the experiences that I was having in the industry, in the market, and showing people that we were knowledgeable in our area of expertise, I think that would have made a huge difference to our business.
Yeah, absolutely. And so how has your vision for the company evolved since you started? What sort of a role has you, because you've grown quite a big team too, I think. I don't want to say the wrong number, but
we're around 20 now. We're around 20. You know, up until 2022, we had 8. And overnight, through acquisition, we went from 8 to actually 24. Overnight, on the 8th of February, 2022. It will be a day that I remember for the rest of my life, I can assure you. And just throwing myself into that position where I'm now need to manage a significantly bigger team. Yeah, there's been a lot of lessons learned. So to go back to your question, I suppose, what has changed? I think the mission's still the same. The mission is remains to provide genuine good quality advice that you know bears the best result for our clients, essentially. But I think what's changed the most is how we go about that. And I would have to say that probably for the first 8 or 9 years, I didn't really get the team involved in day-to-day decisions around the type of service, how we provide that service, and the values that we want to portray in that type of service. But definitely in the last, I would say, 6 years, I have been collaborating with my team on various things like systems, procedures, values, culture. And that was always a dream of mine, by the way. It wasn't my mission, but a personal, I suppose, goal for myself was to surround myself with talented and good quality people, people who were driven and want to do things really, really well. And as the business started to grow and I started to attract and have some really, really good people around me, I really enjoyed collaborating with them. And I continue to do that today.
I can't resist asking you, like you said, that the February the 8th has just burnt into your brain, you know, that it's a day you'll never forget. Tell me what was unforgettable about that day, because I'm sure there will be people out there that will relate to whatever it is.
I've done this to myself a few times, but this was probably the biggest moment that I'd ever thrown myself into in my real estate career. And, you know, you get good advice from good mentors, I suppose, and they make you do silly things like grow, right? And I just remember day one standing in front of a whole bunch of new people and me telling them that we've now taken over the business. And all of a sudden I was coming in with new systems and new procedures. And, you know, and I made it very clear to the team, the new team members, which was the large majority of the business, by the way, that things were going to change. But I didn't make the changes too quickly. I sort of sat there for about 6 months and I watched everybody operate and move around the office. And I've still got bits of paper where I counted the hours that people were looking for keys, you know, like, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Like I literally still got that paper where I was trying to figure out why is it taking you 2 hours to look for a key, down to those smallest little tasks. That first week or first month, I should say, just throwing myself in amongst a team that had never met me with the intention of basically changing everything that they were doing on in their day-to-day business.
Such a big job too when you're sort of dealing with so many new people who aren't used to working with you, and amazing job to have come this far.
You know, it's one thing to be a good real estate agent and build trust with your clients really quickly, your landlords and vendors and buyers and whatnot, but another to be able to build that same level of trust with your team members. And that's what I had to learn to do quickly.
So let's talk about building an effective team, particularly through something that is very close to the heart of every agent, which is rewards, whether it be commission or awards, a lot of those in this industry. So let's talk about your approach to team building, because I know you're quite passionate about things like values and things like that. So first of all, when you're hiring new agents, what skills do you prioritize? And how do you work out if a person's going to fit with those skills?
Most of the skills that we have in real estate, whether it be property management, whether it be admin or sales, a lot of those skills can be taught. You know, what I've learned in the last couple of years is I always start with the values: trust, loyalty, openness, accountability, driven. If you're accountable and you're driven, it means you're somebody who wants to learn, who wants to challenge themselves, and who's going to be open to constructive criticism. We do personality tests here with all of our new staff that come into the business. And the personality test is not there to criticize their personality. It's there to see how they take the feedback when it's given to them before they start. And if they're open to going, okay, here are my weaknesses, let's work on that, then that's the sort of value, that's the sort of person, the attitude that I want to have in my business. If they're not somebody who can take some level of constructive criticism, they're probably not going to fit into our culture here at Bethra & Co, because we are a team who who are driven to continuously improve on what we're doing and evolve. They say that if you're not evolving, you're dying. So I start with the values more than the skills. I think the skills largely can be taught.
So can you share a bit of an example of how you've helped somebody new come into the business and taught them the ways of Besser & Co.? And, you know, and maybe even sort of like, because you've had quite a lot of top performers in the business too, and we know quite a lot of them as well. But can you share an example of how you'd approach that?
Growing a newcomer for me is simpler now than it used to be. The way I've gone about it and the vision that I've had for being able to build people is making sure that our best practices are really, really clearly documented. How best to communicate to a vendor during an auction campaign or a private sale campaign, how to conduct a rent review, what level of communication should you have with your landlord while doing a rent review or a vacate or an ingoing. Having a clear document on best practice that is constantly growing and evolving, by the way. You know, so I think, you know, what I loved as a young person coming into real estate is that I had some incredible people around me guiding me on how to do things. None of it was documented, unfortunately. But just for me to have somebody go from reception into property management is very, very simple now, or from leasing into sales, because I've got best practice documented. And of course, there are going to be variations, you know, the client, the timing, the situation, there'll be small variances which we can guide them through and they'll get experience along the way. But having that basic best practice on how to do something is probably what we've developed here that allows us to build our team now.
So just a little question about that. How do you identify best practice? So, you know, is it when something sort of, some people say that they'll document something after it's worked successfully twice. You know, what are your criteria for sort of going, all right, check, that one's got to go into the playbook, mm-hmm. kind of thing?
For the last 5 or 6 years, I've now had the privilege of being able to collaborate with some really, really good people. Having that basic system or procedure is where I started, and then discussing it with the team. Because it's one thing for me to be able to follow a particular system or procedure and the way I interpret what I've put down in those tasks. But it's another to have 21 other individuals interpret it in the same way. So interpretation and collaboration is really the key. And like I said, our systems and procedures evolving. If we see there's a gap or somebody identifies a problem or a problem occurs, we look back to it's either the system, the resources, and hopefully not the staff member, the resources, the system, and that's what we look at and make sure that they've got the resources and the systems and making sure that we're constantly updating them if we need to.
Yeah, amazing. Let's talk about reward systems, because like I said at the top of the show, I think this is an area where you're not just very good at it, but also very passionate about talking about it. So it's not all about money, right?
Intrinsic and extrinsic motivation. That's an interest, the psychology around what we do.
What motivates people. So just for the uninitiated, can you like give us a bit of a definition of what you refer to as an extrinsic reward? Mm-hmm. And what you refer to as an intrinsic reward.
All right. So I'll just preface by saying that I read a book a few Christmases ago called The Game Changer. And what they did is they analyzed the psychology around video games. And what was it about video games that made people lose and come back and lose and come back and lose and come back? That constant repetition of failing, essentially, but having that desire to continue playing over and over and over again. And they narrowed it down to intrinsic and extrinsic motivation. So extrinsic motivation is the rewards that you get from doing what you do. It could be your bonuses, it could be your wages, it could be your commissions, it could be the awards, it could be the number of sales. Extrinsic is the rewards that you get from doing your day-to-day job. The intrinsic is the enjoyment that you get from, I suppose, the challenge. Right. So in our particular instance, the intrinsic motivation that we try to breed here is, you know, the culture, the values of our team members, the support from our team members, the environment that our team members are in is the intrinsic motivation that people have desire to come back every single day. So having that balance between the reward and the feeling you get from doing your day to day is really, really important. And it's a very fine line. And it's something that we have not mastered yet, but definitely evolving and has evolved dramatically over the last couple of years.
I remember that book, actually, The Game Changer. It was by one Dr. Jason Fox, who he had an elite retreat 1 year. And if anyone's listening to this remembers, we did have him on the podcast. And it was really interesting how, you know, gamification fits into some of my courses just to keep people motivated to finish it. You know, so like it appears everywhere. But how do you tell with a particular person? Because, you know, like, let's say for me, you know, like I sometimes feel like, well, you know, to earn money, I could go and get a job. I could do all of these sorts of things. But I guess what keeps me motivated at a lead agent is the ability to help one person and then the next person and the next person. How do you actually pinpoint with your team, you know, what is going to work for them? Because we're all quite different.
We're all completely different, right? And we've all got different things that motivate us, you know. And I think over the last couple of years, what we've tried to do is really get an understanding as to what is motivating our team, but at the same time, trying to build a model that really works for as many of our team members as possible. And it really does start, I mean, this does not work if your team members have the wrong values, right? So it really does start at the interview process, because you could have a fantastic system or a fantastic, I suppose, strategy for culture and for reward. But if those particular team members don't fit into the values of the business, then it's not going to resonate with those sort of people. So it really does start with having the right people, the right values. And you need to have that documented. You need to know what your values are to factor that in when you're interviewing people. I'm going to say that we have built a great culture and at the same time broken that culture not too soon after that. And we did that almost on purpose. I read The Game Changer, and that drove me to set up a series of KPIs, rewards for a property management team, which is still a larger team today than our sales team. And what I realized, I mean, through that process, we had fantastic extrinsic motivation. People were absolutely motivated to come in and do their rent reviews and get client reviews and to do their routine inspections and do all those day-to-day things that our property management team needed to do. But then what I realized was that as a result of some of those team members not having the right values, although the culture was great, people were really happy to come to work because we had the extrinsic down pat, I realized that the standards weren't quite there. So what I did is I set out to change the person, or to really bring in somebody as head of department in property management who was a career head of department and somebody with, you know, over 20 years experience in that particular part of the business. And pretty much within a month or two, that broke our culture. Because what we were doing is we were increasing those standards, changing that extrinsic motivation, not realizing that extrinsic was the basis for our culture, rather than people coming into work and enjoying the people around them. Now, in the last 12 months, 14 months, we've almost replaced almost everyone in our property management department. And I can say with confidence that I believe we've now got a really good mix between extrinsic and intrinsic. People come into our office now because they enjoy the people that they're around and the values that they hold. But we've also got a really good standard. We've increased our standards incredibly. I mean, if you look at net promoter scores, you know, we're reaching 60 plus almost every quarter. And then we've obviously got the extrinsic, you know, people are hitting their KPIs. We've got a really good standard in the office. And because the standard in the office is really great, they're getting the extrinsic reward as well, because they're getting the bonuses that they want to achieve. So it's something that I've learned about, I've tried, I've broken, and I've had to rebuild as well.
I've had a go at introducing KPIs a couple of times, and I'll be really transparent here with you. It's probably one of the hardest things that, you know, we've done over the years, is sort of say, okay, your money is now tied to some North Star metrics in this business, which might be number of page views. It might be like time on site, that like our metrics are quite different to yours. Usually when I do that, whoever it is leaves. How do you feel like if you were giving me some advice, let's say, about bringing KPIs into a business without losing people along the way?
Well, the question you've got to ask yourself is, are you losing people who don't necessarily believe in the values that you want to believe? And values do change over time, by the way. For me, I would argue I probably didn't have my values documented and communicated well enough to my team members when my business grew from 8 to 24 overnight. And if I had communicated some of those values earlier on, I probably would have lost them earlier on. But at the time, I needed property managers. It was a little bit more difficult. We were coming out of COVID. It wasn't so easy to get property managers at that particular moment, or salespeople. And, you know, so we had people who were driven to earn money and be rewarded, but they weren't driven to challenge themselves, right? So the advice that I would give you, if you were trying to avoid somebody, is really having a conversation around their values and just trying to find out whether they are the right fit for your business moving forward. And then if they are the right fit, they do have the right values, then really take them on a journey, I suppose, and explain to them why you're increasing the standards and how that relates. And hopefully, if it does resonate with their values, they'll stay on and work through it.
And then, you know, I guess if, well, as it turns out, probably wasn't the right person at the time, but what you're saying makes a lot of sense there. So
it's the journey and the communication.
Another thing I was going to sort of ask you too is it's been particularly tough for property managers, particularly, I would say, well, all around the country. I don't want to sort of diminish anyone's one as being worse than the other. Like, so this is where you'd really have to be put to the test on, you know, helping agents find meaning and purpose beyond just doing this because, you know, I need a job. How do you do that in your business?
Well, I think it goes back to my original mission, right? Which was, you know, to provide good quality, genuine advice. You know, we can dictate the legislation. We can read it out to landlords. And remember, there was more than 120 changes to the Residential Tenancy Act a couple of years ago. And there's going to be many more shortly, if not already. There's been a few go through the Senate just recently. But again, building that trust with our clients is probably where it starts. You know, we are getting, unfortunately, especially in Victoria, very good at giving bad news, you know, around these new legislative changes. And if you can build a level of trust with your client where they feel that although the news isn't great, at least it's genuine and you've got their best interest at heart, that's something that we're really focusing on. I just used the word journey just a moment ago, right? And that's something head of department in our office has been using quite commonly around the office. It really is a journey. It's a journey for our clients and it's a journey for our staff. And taking people on that journey, and that starts with your values. It really does start with those values. And if everyone is on the same page with the values, the clients and the staff, then the journey should be relatively smooth.
Absolutely. What about, you know, morale as well? Because again, you know, like if I'd been a property manager in Victoria for the last couple of years, I'd maybe be, you know, feeling the pinch of delivering bad news all the time, dealing with the rental crisis, all of that sort of thing. How do you keep people's spirits up within your team?
I'm going to tell you something that I probably don't do enough and I've started to focus on for myself personally as well as within the business, but it's really about celebrating the wins, right? We've had so much change in the real estate industry in the last couple of years, especially in property management. And quite frankly, the last 12 months hasn't been great for sales either. There's a lot of landlords, there's a lot of vendors who, you know, we're also having to be really direct and communicate clearly with as well. But it's really about celebrating the wins, right? So, you know, with one of the things that I did about 6 months ago, like I said, I broke the culture. I had to rebuild the culture. Is we've now got a culture collective, right? So I realized that culture is not something that I can do on my own, right? I can't sit there in my office and control how people feel all day, every day. So I got a group of people together. They're in a leadership position because they're in isolation, right? It doesn't necessarily, it's not about their title. It's about who they are and what they do. And I've got this collective now that we meet every month and we discuss all things culture and people, right? And now it's a responsibility of a group of us. So coming back to morale, it's about celebrating those wins. And we're doing our quarterly awards now where we all go out and have a great time and that's all very nice. But it's about really communicating with the team members, the wins on the board. You know, all day, every day, we have tough conversations with people, vendors, landlords, buyers, tenants. It's all there. That's not going to go away. That is our job. Our job is there to solve a problem for our clients. For us, it's about identifying those wins, you know, the VCAT wins, the wins on the board with regards to sales, the negotiations, the number of properties we've rented, the results that we've got for our clients, like the per square meter rate for a block of land, you know, achieving a great result or a record price. It's about identifying them and communicating that, I believe, helps us with our morale.
That just made me smile then because, you know, you can always choose to find the good in everything, and it sort of sounds like that's really working for you.
It's still a work in progress.
Yeah, I think for everyone.
Yeah.
So let's talk about money now. Like, so we've talked about the inner sort of game. Beyond the standard commissions, have you found that anything else reward-wise works in motivating the team?
I got into real estate in 2000, 2001. Right? And, you know, it was real estate 101 is prospecting, phone calls, how many face-to-face meetings, how many listing presentations, how many letterbox drops, all that sort of stuff. Right? I don't think none of that has changed, right? I mean, yes, we have artificial intelligence and we have technology now to help us organize ourselves and perhaps do things quicker and more efficiently. There's no doubt about it. But really the core day-to-day of sales still remains the same. In order to be able to build genuine, long-lasting relationships with our vendors, we need to have a high level of communication leading up to them deciding to go with us, and then throughout that period of the campaign. And I mean, the commission structures haven't changed. I know that a lot of agencies are now offering high commission structures. If they hit a certain GCI, they'll increase the percentage. But really, like, if I come back to celebrating the wins, right? You know, I've got a salesperson who's been with me for a bit over a year now, and she's really starting to get wind in her sail, right? And it's simply as a result of being able to keep her tasks under control. You know, each week we look at her tasks, and we use Box and Dice for everybody out there. I want them to be able to get themselves rewards by actually achieving a goal, like keeping on top of your tasks or making 80 phone calls in a week or whatever that might look like. You know, Matthew McConaughey said it really, really well. You know, we all, you know, and I think there was a question around competition. I think too much competition within an office is not healthy for culture, and I don't think it's actually good for the client either. And we're so busy in our real estate offices comparing ourselves with others in the office and chasing what somebody else in their office has. Matthew McConaughey, I think in his Oscar speech, said it really, really well a couple of years ago. I can't remember how many years ago. It was a while ago. He asked, who is the hero that you chase? And for him, the hero that he chases is him in 10 years. So I think the culture that I'm going to, you know, build here is where people are comparing and chasing their dreams and their achievements and then rewarding themselves by actually hitting their targets rather than them looking at somebody else in the office who's doing really well and going, I want what they've got. Or Dion said, you know, you need to hit this particular target. Find out what they want to do. Find out what motivates them and help them achieve that. And I think what you'll find is that they'll reward themselves for actually doing what they wanted to do.
Yeah, I think Ryan Serhan, you might have heard of him. Just trying to remember, I think when I interviewed him, he said he has a photo of him at 70 in his office that he often looks at, that mm-hmm. he wants the old dude to be proud of him now.
Well, that's it. You know, I mean, again, I've worked in some really competitive environments, really competitive environments, really successful real estate businesses, by the way. But I think things are changing a little bit. And I'm learning this from the intrinsic and extrinsic. I think extrinsic motivation was a big part of people's motivation to work in previous generations. And as some of the younger people are coming into my business and I'm reading a little bit and learning a bit from different people, I think it's now about that intrinsic as well. And then finding out what it intrinsically motivate somebody, and their dreams, their desires should be what they're chasing, not what somebody else has got.
All right, so let's get on to now, 2025 is going to be a good year. I've come to this year feeling super positive. What would your advice for agents entering the industry be?
If you're somebody thinking about getting into real estate, and something that I've built into my interview, you know, going in applying for a job in a real estate firm is as much that agency selecting you as it is you selecting them. I think people rush into jobs really quickly thinking, I want to go get a job in real estate, and then they go and have a few interviews, and then they pick an agency that maybe inspires them the most or is perceived to be the biggest and the best, right? And I think there's a lot of smoke and mirrors in real estate, I think, like you said, at the very beginning. For anybody looking to get into real estate today, I think they need to be asking their potential employer, what path to success do you have for me? And if that employer can't communicate that to them or show them how they're going to succeed in real estate, they're not going to succeed. I mean, as much as some people have the right qualities, they're driven and they're smart and they can talk and they've got the look and all that sort of stuff, right? If that particular employer doesn't have a path to success that's well documented and can be communicated clearly, that employer is not going to get them to where they want to be, right? And just make sure that that employer's values align with yours. Interview your employers. That's the advice, right? You're walking into an interview and you think you're being interviewed, but really they should be walking into an interview with the intention of finding out whether they're the right employer for them.
Good answer. What about key skills for 2025? Like, what are the main things that you think an agent needs to thrive in this day and age, this environment where we're at right now?
I think patience and persistence is still the message that I'm communicating to my staff, and I'm also communicating it to my landlord and our vendors. You know, CoreLogic put out the last quarter of last month, the market had slipped a bit in Melbourne in terms of the median price. And there's a lot of investors who are selling their properties in Melbourne at the moment. And I think if you're not somebody who can be patient, persistent, and communicate that they need to be patient and persistent, I think you're going to find yourself in a situation 2, 3, 4 weeks later where that that vendor is now considering somebody else. Again, you need to take your clients on a journey, right? And right now, the journey that they need to be taken on is a slightly longer journey than it would be if you were in a really, really good market. Now, in rentals, we are fortunate to have a very strong market. We are moving our rental properties really, really quickly. But at the same time, there's a lot of change with legislation. So we need to take them down that journey of being able to update their properties in accordance with the legislation with our vendors. Again, patience and persistence. If you start the relationship with the vendor understanding that it's going to take some time, it may not be quick. It might be, but if it's not, be ready. If you can't take them on a journey, I think you're going to find yourself getting business, working, and losing the business. Patience and persistence, that's my message.
Great message too. It's like we're all in this together. Mm-hmm. You know, like, so, you know, might as well sort of stick with it for the long haul. If there was one thing that you could tell your younger self entering the real estate industry, or if there's one lesson that you would give young Dion now, knowing what you know, what would it be?
Listeners, I've been thinking about this question a bit because, I mean, I've been listening to your podcast for a long time. I will admit, a lot of my growth has come as a result of listening to people who have been on your podcasts, right? I've made some really, really good decisions, but I've put myself in some really interesting positions as a result of taking that advice. I think that the best advice that I can give, I think there's two bits of advice. First, I think social media and getting out there and making sure that you've got a presence in your network is absolutely paramount. The first thing that I ask any new salesperson in my office to do is, you know, if they're young, go to their parents and ask for every single phone number in their Rolodex. If they've got a Rolodex or a phone, get every single contact. You need to be contacting those first 50 or 100 people and making sure that they know that you're in real estate. If they're seasoned real estate agents, make sure that you've got a contact list or a network, or you at least have a strategy to build that network. So social media is one bit of advice. Make sure you get out there and make sure you build a good quality database or have at least a strategy to do that. I think the second bit of advice, and I think probably as important, is choose the right agency to work for. Yes, get into real estate. Real estate's a great industry to be in. And I think this is my 24th or 25th year in real estate. The day-to-day is great and you can do that anywhere. But being in an environment where you're going to thrive and grow is probably the biggest challenge. So when you go into an interview at a real estate agency, make sure you ask really, really good questions so that you get a clear indication as to whether it's the right agency for you or not.
Well, Dion, it's been wonderful to have you, like, long-time listener, first-time caller. We finally
did this. Absolutely.
But it's really great to actually have you on the podcast, and I'm sure that everyone will have gotten a lot out of, you know, because that was a very honest conversation we just had about, you know, all sorts of things, reward systems, motivation, all of that sort of thing. But if there was one thing that you could leave everyone with, or one final piece of advice, what would it be?
You know, we're in an industry now where we can do more with a lot less. Right. So I think the best bit of advice I can give for anyone in real estate right now or getting into real estate is be somebody who's passionate enough to learn about the industry. Don't just get into real estate because you want to sell and rent houses. Right. Be a student. That's the word I was looking for. Be a student of the industry. We've got so many amazing resources. We've got the Elite Agent podcast and your articles that come out all the time. We've got an enormous amount of resource in this industry that so many industries do not have. And if you don't tap into these resources, you're not going to be successful. And so just be a student of the game.
Amazing advice. Dion Besser, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.